In episode 11, Random Retrospective chronicled the rise of the Crofts from their humble origins as puppeteers at the World's Fair to their rise as one of the biggest producers of Saturday morning television. In this episode, we'll look at their continued triumphs in children's TV and their expansion into primetime television as they suffered a few defeats along the way. We'll look at where they are now and how their legacy continues to influence the entertainment industry. So, shine up your ice skates, smile, and beware of a madman with an evil mind. This is Random Retrospective.
Don't get left behind. Take a trip with us today. We will lead you to a land of dreams. Broadcast some super shows. They will blow your mind away.
In 1976, Sid and Marty Krofft were riding high after they scored big with their popular fare on Saturday mornings. Land of the Lost was ending its run on NBC, but the Krofts had another idea up their sleeve. They would create a new show that would feature a group of young musicians that would introduce smaller shows in an old movie serial type of format. Thus began the Krofts Super Show. Fronted by future actor and director Michael Lembeck, Captain Cool and the Kongs were a sort of glam rock but non-threatening type of band that appealed to many ages. The music they sang was written by the Osmonds, and they did funny sketches in between the real stars of the show, three segments of new Krofft half-hour shows. The first show was Wonderbug. Wonderbug was sort of a take on Disney's The Love Bug series of films. In this case, an old beat-up dune buggy by the name of Schlepcar would turn into the wonderful Wonderbug when a magical old-fashioned car horn was honked. Wonderbug could fly and helped three teenagers, Barry, Susan, and Cece, solve crimes. The second show was my personal favorite, Dr. Shrinker. This segment was about three teenagers, see a trend here, who crash land their plane on a mysterious island. They make their way to the only house on the island and are immediately captured by the mad Dr. Shrinker and his henchman, Otto. Dr. Shrinker was played by eccentric character actor Jay Robinson. Robinson was probably best known at this point for his role as the Emperor Caligula in The Robe and its sequel, Demetrius and the Gladiators. Robinson's distinctive voice and over-the-top performance made him a great TV villain. Dr. Shrinker actually revived Robinson's career, which continued into his retirement into the year 2000. Robinson's life was very colorful and definitely worth looking into for those who appreciated his style of acting. Otto was played by the always dependable Billy Barty, who had already made a name for himself as one of the premier little people actors on film and television. Barty actually coined the term little people when he was dismayed by another actor, Hervé Villechaize from Fantasy Island, who referred to himself as a midget. Barty felt it demeaned shorter people because it was a term used by carnival freak shows to describe their types of performers. The Krofts have admitted that the inspiration for the segment was from the Albert Deckard sci-fi horror film Dr. Cyclops, which had a similar premise. The third show is also a favorite of mine, but not for the same reason. Electra Woman and Dinah Girl were the electra-fantastic adventures of a female crime-fighting duo who, when they weren't fighting crime, worked as reporters for Newsmaker magazine. Each episode would center on their fight against the various nefarious fiends they encountered, such as the Spider Lady and Glitter Rock. They operated out of the Electra base, where Frank Heflin, played by veteran character actor Norman Alden, would run the Electra computer and feed information to them on their Electra comms as they traveled through the city in their Electra car. Does this sound a little familiar? That's right. It's basically the 1960s version of Batman with a gender switch. Deirdre Hall, who would later gain fame on the daytime drama Days of Our Lives as Dr. Marlena Evans, played Electra Woman. I've spoken to many men my age, and we all agree that Electra Woman and Dinah Girl were Electra hot, and they hold a special place for us in our hearts. The Captain Cool and the Kong segments were filmed mainly at the Wonderful World of Sid and Marty Krofft Amusement Park, located inside the Omni International Entertainment Complex in downtown Atlanta, Georgia. Unfortunately, the park was not a hit and was closed down within a year. The Crofts felt that it wasn't given the support it needed to survive, but truthfully, the park was a victim of poor ride maintenance and negative publicity. Eventually, the entire complex would become the world headquarters for CNN. That wasn't the only change in store for the Crofts. In 1977, Captain Cool and the Kongs were given a makeover and made to look less glam rock. Instead, they looked what someone who thought rock stars might look like. Also, Dr. Shrinker and Electro Woman and Dino Girl were replaced by Magic Mongo and Bigfoot and Wild Boy. I can tell you that I pretty much quit watching the show at that point. Magic Mongo was sort of a cross between I Dream of Jeannie and a beach movie of the 1960s. It starred Croft regular Lenny Weintraub as Mongo, a bumbling genie who attempted to help three teenagers through their misadventures. The other segment, Bigfoot and Wild Boy, was an adventure series that took place in the northwestern United States. The duo would fight crime and aliens during this brief run. Now, of all the half-hour shows produced on the Croft Super Show, this show was actually put into reruns as a show on its own and ran until 1979. The Croft Super Show would undergo another change in 1978, when Captain Cool and the Kongs were replaced by a group that everyone thought would be the next Beatles. To this day, Marty Croft has stated that he regretted taking a trip to Scotland in order to sign up a rock band. The band in question was the Bay City Rollers, and everyone, including the Crofts, thought they were going to be huge in the pop music industry. Instead, they were a blip in the musical radar scope. The show was redubbed the Croft Superstars, and Magic Mongo, Wonderbug, and Bigfoot and Wild Boy were dropped in favor of two new segments, Horror Hotel and The Lost Island. Horror Hotel was about a scary, but funny, hotel run by none other than Witchy Poo from H.R. Puff and Stuff, and featured many of the villainous characters from early Croft shows. The other segment, The Lost Island, also featured many characters from previous Croft shows. Puff and Stuff, Sigmund the Sea Monster, and Weenie the Genie would all try to evade the evil machinations of Dr. Deathray, played by Jay Robinson, and his henchman Otto, again played by Billy Barty. This show is generally seen as a failure because of the Bay City Rollers' inability to act and their quick dive into musical obscurity. After 8 episodes, it dropped the Lost Island segment and was reduced to a 30-minute program retitled The Bay City Roller Show. The show was canceled in 1979. The Saturday morning lineup of 1980 would not contain an original Croft show, but that was no matter, because the Crofts had already scored big in 1976 with a primetime variety show that featured ice skaters, guest stars, and two teenage hosts who were a little bit country and a little bit rock and roll. But first, this word from our sponsor. Having conquered Saturday morning, Crofts set their sights on primetime television success. In the fall of 1976, Crofts premiered not one, but two variety shows. The first shared two members of one of the country's favorite entertainment families and would run for 4 years. The second starred one of America's favorite TV families and would only last a meager 8 episodes. ABC chairman Fred Silverman watched as 18-year-old Donny Osmond and 16-year-old Marie Osmond serve as co-host for the popular daytime talk show The Mike Douglas Show. He felt their natural ease on camera and singing talents would translate into a successful variety show. This was a bold move because the variety show format was dying in the late 70s, and producing a new one was taking a considerable risk. But the clean, wholesome singing of the Osmonds and their fun sibling banter made the show an instant hit. The Crofts were enlisted to produce the show. The Donny and Marie Show aired on Friday nights and spawned an enormous amount of revenue, not only for the network, but also for the Crofts. The format was simple. The show would begin with an ice skating number by the Ice Vanities. Donny and Marie would skate out and sing a song together, joke with one another, and eventually introduce the guest stars. Two guest stars were practically regulars. Ruth Buzzy from Laugh-In turned up on several episodes, and Paul Lind. Lind was used to burn out his contract with the network after he had failed in his own sitcom and as a co-star in the medical comedy Temperatures Rising. The most popular segment, by far, was the Osmonds' Little Bit Country, Little Bit Rock and Roll segments, where the siblings would sing snippets of a few songs in each genre. Marie, who had scored a country hit with her tune Paper Roses, would sing the country sections, and Donny, who was desperately trying to shed his teeny bopper image, would serve up his own versions of popular rock and roll hits. Admittedly, Marie had the better end of this segment, because nearly everything that Donny did seemed like he was trying too hard. I am particularly amused at watching some of the covers he did, my favorite of which is David Bowie's Fame. Alas, the Crofts did not produce all 4 seasons of the Donny and Marie Show. After the first 2 seasons, the Osmond family took control of the show, eliminated the Ice Vanities and the Little Bit Country, Little Bit Rock and Roll segments, and moved production from Los Angeles to their new production facility in Orem, Utah. This change, combined with the news that Donnie was dating and eventually married fellow Utah resident Debbie Glenn, began the decline in the popularity of the show, and it eventually ended in 1979. Marie would try to do one more series in 1980, but even her sexier makeover and the dresses of Bob Mackie couldn't save the show. In the same month of the premiere of the Donnie and Marie show, the Crofts also produced a show starring one of America's favorite sitcom families, the Brady's. To say the Brady Bunch variety hour was a train wreck is really an understatement. The premise of the show differed slightly than Donnie Marie in that father, Mike Brady, gives up his job as an architect and joins his family in doing a variety show slash sitcom. The show would start off with a musical number with the Brady, sometimes including the dance water ballet numbers by the Croftettes. Really, this show is a great example of why the variety show died on television. The jokes were lame, the musical numbers contrived. In fact, the only person who actually had any musical theater talent was Florence Henderson. Robert Reed, who played Father Mike Brady, couldn't sing or dance. Barry Williams, who played eldest son Greg, was sold on the series when it was suggested that it would be Barry Williams starring in the Brady Bunch Variety Hour. My only real memories of the series were that Eve Plum did not return to play middle daughter Jan, and a musical number that I thought was pretty edgy for the show. Guest star Paul Williams appeared late in the series and sang the song The Hell of It from the recently released Brian De Palma film The Phantom of the Paradise. I was surprised that the word hell would be allowed on a primetime TV series, much less a show featuring the Bradys. Mercifully, the show was canceled after only 8 episodes. In 1980, the Crofts tried their hand at 2 more variety shows. Again, the results were one was a modest hit and the other a huge flop. Since we started talking about the hit in our last section, let's go to the flop on this one. The singing duo of Pink Lady were massively popular in their native Japan and then even scored a minor hit in the American Top 40 charts with a song called Kisses in the Dark. NBC thought it would be a great idea if they were given their own variety show in the U.S. and enlisted the Crofts to produce the show. Unfortunately, no one had bothered to see if the two ladies, me and Kay, could speak English. They couldn't. So they had to learn all their lines phonetically. While the girls were very cute, sang well, and actually had pretty good comic timing, the show was awkward because of their unfamiliarity with English and the interaction they had with American comic Jeff Altman, who was brought in to help compensate for the girls' lack of fluency in our language. The girls couldn't commit to doing many comedy sketches, so a troupe of comedians were hired to fill in with the gaps. Among the troupe was Jim Varney, who would later gain fame as Ernest P. Worrell in a series of commercials and films. The reason the girls couldn't commit much time to the show was that they still had concert commitments in Japan and would fly back and forth to honor these commitments. Production was chaotic, sometimes with guests trying to ad-lib lines, which caused me and Kay to not understand what was going on because they could not do the same due to their lack of experience in English. You can tell that Jeff Altman wasn't comfortable with the show because many of the segments with the girls seemed, in my mind, very sexist and very racist. One joke that stood out to me was on the very first episode after the girls said that they thought Jeff was very handsome. His response was that they only liked him because of his big round eyes. Yikes. Altman was particularly uncomfortable with the ending segment of each show, where the girls would push him into a hot tub while he was wearing a tuxedo. He protested that it was contrived, but was outvoted by the writing staff. Probably the main reason was that it gave the audience an opportunity to see the girls in bikinis. Pink Lady filmed 6 episodes, but only 5 have ever aired. It is considered one of the worst shows ever aired on American television. Now, the case was not the same for the Barbara Mandrell and the Mandrell Sisters show. This show featured popular country singer Barbara Mandrell and her sisters Louise and Earlene. The show was very popular. Louise Mandrell had scored some minor hits on the charts, but Earlene really had no talent other than being a drummer, although I did find her very funny in sketches. The Mandrells would do the typical variety show things, singing, dancing, performing with guest stars and comedy sketches. They were aided by Truck Shackley and the Texas Critters, 5 life-size Croft puppets who acted as their house band. The show could have probably ran for more than the 2 seasons it was given, but Barbara Mandrell ended it because the grind of doing a weekly show was causing her to suffer from vocal strain. And truthfully, the variety show had pretty much run its course at this point, and it was time to leave it behind. One thing that was unusual about the show was that it ended with the Mandrells singing a gospel song. The Crofts' next venture was a return to Saturday mornings with a very unlikely star. Pryor's Place starred Richard Pryor, who was known for his use of profanity in his comedy act. It was basically a more urban take on Sesame Street, featuring many Croft puppets. It was meant to be educational, but unfortunately, tastes for children's television were geared more towards cartoons, and Pryor's Place ran for just one season. In 1985, the Crofts produced a series which many people see as the American version of the popular British series Spitting Image. DC Follies was a puppet-based program that satirized the American entertainment and political scene. The show took place in a Washington, D.C. bar. The bartender was comedian Fred Willard. It was a syndicated program that ran for 2 years. Unlike Spitting Image, DC Follies wasn't really vicious or mean-spirited. It was just satirical. At the same time, earlier Croft shows were being distributed through syndication, and none were more popular than Land of the Lost. As a response, in 1991, ABC aired a new Land of the Lost. Like its previous incarnation, it told the tale of a family who were trapped in a world where dinosaurs, the ape-like Pecunis, and reptilian Sleestaks lived side by side. Although the concept was basically the same, the designs for the Pecuni and the Sleestaks were altered. Now, I only watched a few episodes of the series and turned it off when my favorites, the Sleestaks, were introduced, because they looked too cartoony for my liking. The family, now called the Porters, were joined by a jungle girl, Krista. Originally, Krista was meant to be a grown-up Holly from the original series, but that idea was scrapped. It ran for 2 seasons and was re-aired on the Nickelodeon network from 1995 to 1997. So, what's happened to the Crofts since their last network show? Well, actually a lot. They've produced a show on Nick Jr. called Mutt and Stuff, which stars Dog Whisperer Caesar Milan's son Calvin, and is a kid's comedy show about a whimsical and wacky dog school. The Crofts have also tried to revive some of their few more popular shows, including Electra Woman and Dyna Girl. A pilot was produced in 2001, which followed the adventures of a much more cynical and grittier version of the famed crime-fighting duo. Starring Marky Post, it's never aired on network television, but you can see parts of it on YouTube. The Crofts have also revived the show in 2016 as a web series, starring YouTube stars Grace Helbig and Hannah Hart. In 2017, they produced a web series revival of Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. In 2009, a parody film of Land of the Lost was produced starring Will Ferrell. The Crofts and the original show's fans have been very vocal about their disappointment in the poorly received film. The Crofts have vowed that they hope to do a film version of the show that will do it justice. Finally, one positive thing that's come out of the year 2020 was that the Crofts received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. So, what are your favorite shows and memories of the works of Sid and Marty Croft? Please share them by writing to randomretrospective@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Until our next show, may all your pop culture references be relevant.
May tomorrow be a perfect day.
May you find love and laughter along the way.
May God keep you in His tender care
till He brings us together again.
Good night, everybody.